You're listening to the Happiness Patrol.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast, Happiness Patrol, episode number 132. Listen up, because we're going to talk about listen. Okay. Right. Okay, good. Right? Yay. Yep. Nancy. Yes. Nancy said yes. And Michelle.
Yep,
hey,
sure.
We're all back. It's Nancy. Hey, Nancy.
Hello.
It's Michelle. Hey, Michelle.
Hi.
Howdy. And, of course, the ever-lovable, ever-poppable, ever-squeezable.
Proppable?
Proppable. He's very proppable.
Totally a word.
I'm making it one now. Hey, Chaz.
Google it.
What's going on, Chaz?
Surprise, surprise, surprise. Plus, we're doing hee-haw introduction.
We're doing it. It's our very special all-nude hee-haw special Happiness Patrol. And it's an all-new reviewed here. The all-nude review of hee-haw Happiness Patrol. And, God, I can't wait. I can't wait. You know why, Chaz?
TMI. Because that there Happiness Patrol starts now.
Oh, yes, it does.
Doom, despair, and agony on me.
Whoa.
Deep, dark depression. I can't find my pants nowhere.
Whoa.
If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all.
Whoa.
Doom, despair, Doctor Who's on tonight.
That's not doom and despair.
Well, to some people, holy crap! I've seen a lot of people that don't like Capaldi. I'm a little fed up with this.
I haven't seen any of that.
See, I
clearly you're friends with the wrong people.
I am friends with the wrong people.
Yeah, I hear echoes about it. Like, well, I think you wanted to mention the lovely message I got from listener Graham Sheridan.
Oh, we did. Do you have that up in front of you on your computer screen there, Nancy?
I can.
We got a longtime listener. And award, he's won prizes here on the Happiness Patrol.
Award-winning Happiness Patrol listener.
Yeah.
Hey.
Graham Sheridan.
He has won literally tens of dollars in merchandise.
The only Scotsman I know that lives in Germany.
I know.
Every
once in a while, I see him post something in German, and it's kind of like, whoa.
It is weird, isn't it? It's very good. But we love Graham, and he sent us a little message. He sent us a little message, actually aimed toward our own Nancy A. Why don't you read it for us?
Okay. He said, just got done with the latest episode of the Happiness Patrol, and I just wanted to thank you. Like Dale Hoove, I've had a hard time trying to get into Capaldi's Doctor. I love Jenna as Clara as a way to keep enjoying the show. Well, I renamed Doctor Who to the amazing time-traveling escapades of Clara and some grumpy bloke. Now, after you saying that Capaldi's Doctor is just like a stroppy teenager, things went clear. Click and finally made sense. So thank you. Some of us are really having a hard time trying to enjoy Capaldi's Doctor. Me, I just need some sort of handle on things. So I thought that was interesting. And actually, that was one of the first things I'd heard about people not enjoying Capaldi's Doctor. I have to admit, Twitter fan I am. I haven't really been on Twitter very much lately. Every once in a while, like
bad girl,
scroll through, but I'm not keeping up on a daily basis. And I think that's where you see a lot of the vitriol coming out.
I guess. Or Outpost Gallifrey.
I haven't been there in years. That's a scary place.
A wretched hive of scum and villainy.
That's true.
Oh, my God. We'll get the letters now.
I also got a nice user comment from our friend Ken Barr of the Cultum Collective and a magnificent human being. Mm-hmm. A staple of Gallifrey one. And it's just it was last year was the first time he had to miss it, and it just wasn't the same convention without him. Anyway, he called. He said that we had a joyful podcast
on
our last episode, and I thought, you know, that's what we're shooting for. Thanks, Ken.
Yeah,
happiness will prevail.
Happiness will prevail here, I like that when people you know respond positively, because it's all too easy to do this, and we've been doing it almost 5 years now. In November, it will be 5 years, our 5 year anniversary.
We can go to kindergarten.
Yay!
And you know, and I think,
what kind of lunchbox should we get, guys?
I don't know.
Star Trek.
I want to keep my HR Puffin stuff lunchbox. Since you couldn't find your pants clearly,
or what you're wearing, your HR Puffin stuff costume.
I think it's around here somewhere. Well, just the head part. I'm just sitting here nude in a chair with HR Puffin stuff on my head. So,
did they ever make a Gorn lunchbox? I think there should have been a Gorn lunchbox. I'd bring a Gorn lunchbox.
That Gorn ate my cookies. Hey,
I literally had a Laugh-In lunchbox when I was a kid.
I had Pigs in Space.
That's cool. Yeah. Laugh-In's pretty damn cool too. Hey. Listeners, listen up.
That's what we talk about.
If you've got a cool lunchbox, send us a picture to our Facebook page, and we'll put it up there. And if it's a Doctor Who related lunchbox, even the better, because apparently that's what we are. We are America's and Great Britain's only all nude happiness Doctor Who review podcast.
Please stop saying that. Anyway, Doctor Who.
Yes.
If any of our fans out there own a pair of Doctor Who underoos, don't send us a picture of that.
Yeah. Graham Sheridan, I know you have a pair. And I know Tim Drury has one.
No.
Yes, I know Tim Drury has a pair of those Doctor Who underoos.
I don't want to know how you know.
So, Nancy, this latest episode was called Listen, and it was written by Stephen Moffat, right?
Yes, it was.
How interesting.
That was very interesting. You know, I have only got a chance to see this one once because we were recorded on Sunday morning, and it's early. And it's still sort of seeping in on me. I watched it on BBC America with my good friend Eddie, since we're calling out names.
Yay, Eddie.
Eddie F. Hi, Eddie. From Orlando. He does one of my favorite Fourth Doctor costume cosplayer type sort of.
Oh, Eddie there. F.
Yes, he's great.
Yeah, I met him at Hurricane Who last year. He is a fun dude.
So he came over last night. We had some beers and some chips. He played with the kittens, and we watched Doctor Who. It was a lot of fun. You know what? He brought a whole new. He's such a positive influence on me. He brought a whole new perspective for me on watching Doctor Who with commercials, and I was like, I hate watching Doctor Who with commercials. I fucking hate it. So, but he was like going, no, you gotta understand. You watch Doctor Who with commercials, you have time to eat some chips and reflect on what you just saw. And so that's what we did last night. We were kind of talking about it as it was going on during the commercials. So, because, you know, talking during Doctor Who is a cardinal sin.
Yes.
So you have to wait for the commercials. So that the commercials actually worked out. We just muted that thing and talked, and it was really nice. So I really had a good time watching it. As far as the episode is concerned, boy, oh boy, it was a little bit of a mixed bag for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought, and I've noticed now that we're on the fourth episode now, the editing and direction of these episodes has been just nothing less than stellar. It really has been good. The pacing problems have mostly not been there. I've noticed that. But it is kind of weird because, like I said, I saw it with commercials last night. I got to wait, and I need to see it, you know, all the way through with no interruptions and by myself so I can really digest it. But all in all, I really enjoyed it. We'll get to some of the details later. But, Chaz, tell me what was your overall view?
Oh, my wife and I watched it together. We've only seen it the one time.
Uh-huh.
For the same reason that you mentioned, but without commercials. And, yes, we just... This is what we call atmosphere, friends. Uh-huh. This is really, I don't want to do all the callbacks, but I will just mention one. This series goes back. No, I'll mention two.
I'm going to call Blink, you Callback Chaz from now on.
Well, there were just such strong overtones of Blink and The Edge of Destruction,
yeah.
Especially at the beginning, where the doctor's, you know, where just being alone for too long drives you a little crazy. And so, yeah, we really enjoyed it. We loved the atmosphere. We were thinking it was going to be scarier than it actually was, but I'm sure it hit exactly the right note of trauma for all the younger viewers, you know, the very young viewers.
So, oh, yeah.
So this was definitely a behind-the-sofa episode.
Uh-huh.
And I just – and I love going inside – anything that scares the bejesus out of the doctor himself.
Right.
That's always going to be an interesting episode. And so, and it didn't disappoint this time. This is one of the first episodes I can think of in some time where I thought that was just the right amount. Somebody has figured out how to write 45-minute Doctor Who.
Now, Michelle, what did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I didn't find, like, I mentioned a couple of, last couple episodes, there were a little bit of pacing issues with me. I didn't have that in this episode. I thought it moved. It was great. Everybody was great in it. I was afraid that the guy they found, you know, when you follow BBC America on any kind of social media, you're going to get spoiled in some way. And so I'd seen the guy in the spacesuit that looked like Danny, but with hair. And I was just like, oh God, please don't let that be Danny. And it wasn't. And, but it was not Danny in a way that was very interesting and in a way that still left Clara's, relationship with Danny, the future of it, open to other possibilities.
Right,
and
right.
I really liked it. And first of all, like the whole, all of the sort of the discussions on the nature of fear were really connected with me because I have kind of a reputation of going around and being kind of loud and brash and fearless, but that's really not the case. I mean, I don't have anxiety attacks, but I'm pretty much constantly afraid of any number of things.
Uh-huh.
And it's like there's an image on Facebook and it says, I got 99 problems and 87 of them are things that don't exist that I've totally made up in my head. And so whenever I try to talk to other people about fear and having confidence, every so often I have to give some kind of speech on a subject. And so I give the speech on like public speaking and how to get over your fear of doing that. Everybody is always so shocked and surprised and incredulous when I admit to them that I'm afraid of them not caring what I have to say or any other stupid thing that's not really important. And so I think that this was a really great episode. I think it was a very important episode thematically to kids and to maybe even a lot of us adult viewers about, allowing the doctor to be someone who is afraid. You know, I think this doctor has flaws in ways that our doctors haven't had in the new series very much. He's wrong. He's wrong quite a bit so far. He's wrong at least once an episode so far. If you want what is called competence porn, then watch Leverage. Competence porn, where it's like there's just
like
somebody and they're really good at what. Yeah, I know, right? I stole that from Spooky Owl House Productions. Anyways, but... it's a gaming podcast. But anyway, somebody who's always good and always is right and never is wrong. You know, even Sherlock Holmes is wrong sometimes. Like Chaz mentioned last episode, when they are proved wrong, they change their position and they move forward. I think the doctor is very very much aware that he is afraid is striving to overcome that fear. And that's what this episode was about. And
cool, cool. So overall,
I loved it.
Overall, you loved it.
Overall, I loved it.
Cool, cool, cool. Wow, that's good. Nancy.
Yes.
Now, we have talked about this off recording. But Nancy, we're going to get to you right now. You've seen it. How many times have you seen it?
Just once.
Just the once.
Because I,
okay,
too, have not had time to, right, watch it again.
Right. Now, what? Let it all spill, hon. Let it all spill. I'm going to walk away from the mic for a second.
Okay, I'm going to be positive uh-huh, here. I thought the direction was great. I didn't think there were any pacing issues. I think the acting was excellent. I think Jenna is really good. I still think Capaldi is amazing. I think, I can't remember his name, the guy who plays Danny, I think he did a very good job. It had everything you've come to expect in a Moffat script. It had characters going back in time to visit other characters as children. Mm-hmm. It had monsters under the bed. Mm-hmm. It had monsters that turn out not to be monsters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It had backstory for the doctor that I think is probably going a little too far. Mm. And that's all I'm going to say.
Uh-oh.
Because I'm being positive.
So
I knew that your reaction would be something like that.
I still need to write that essay on Moffat's five ideas that he keeps reusing over and over again.
Well,
I'm not keen on being told this is something you need to be afraid of, and rather than showing me something to be afraid of. And actually, that is a comment my daughter made. Being positive again, I do like the discussion of fear and the nature of fear. I think that was very good, and that's a good thing for children to hear. But
yeah.
This was not my favorite.
Not your favorite.
I think, am I right? Is Rory the only Moffat character who we haven't seen as a child?
You're wrong.
Oh, we saw Rory?
We saw Rory as a child when they were hanging out with Mels as a child.
Okay, there you go. 100% of Moffat characters we have seen as children.
Moffat has a thing about kids. I mean, we've talked about this before. He's got children of his own. He's writing Doctor Who to scare his own kids. It's a very personal sort of thing. What do you think, Michelle?
I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, clearly, I do agree with you. There are the five things. There are five clever things that Moffat has come up with. Uh-huh. And he's like, look, aren't I clever? It's like, yes, okay, we get it, you're clever.
Well, you're clever the same way. It's like, be clever a different way once.
But I think that's getting to see, because, Doctor Who is a kids show, and getting to see these characters as kids helps kids, might help kids identify with the characters even more.
Right, you're exactly right.
That would be cool for the kids.
I agree with the value of that, but I think 100% is a little high of a percentage.
Okay.
I agree with that.
Now, but here's the thing. You're talking about a showrunner of the most popular show on BBC, okay? Mm-hmm. They have worked very hard at it. The suits have worked very hard at getting the popularity of Doctor Who where it is now. And that is some sort of feat when you think about, you know, Chaz, when we were younger watching Doctor Who and being like, you know, what the hell is this show that these nerds are watching? Clearly mainstream now. It's clearly a viable commercial. It's a property. It's a commercial property owned by the BBC. Of course, they are going to use Moffat and keep that success rate going with his little bag of tricks that he does. Now, here's a show that's being written for kids, but also for adults. It's written for new Who fans, casual viewers, and people who are brand new to Doctor Who. And it's also to all the classic Who fans and long-term Who fans. And I think so far, this show and Stephen Moffat has been really doing that balancing act very, very well. I mean, not everybody's going to be 100% satisfied 100% all the time, but that's the chance you got to take when you have a viable commercial product like Doctor Who has become.
Well, I think there's two factors going on here. One is that, honestly, I think Capaldi has made everybody up their game, quite frankly. Even if you're in the camp that Steven's reusing his tropes too much, he's juggling them better than last year, I think. The second thing that's happening, I think, is the is the failure of the cast. This was a thought that I read somewhere, but the failure of there to be a Sherlock Series 4 going on this year allowed Moffat and the rest of the people involved to kind of focus on Doctor Who a little bit more this year. And I kind of, that's probably why we're getting so many psychological themes, is because he's not getting to do Sherlock and he needs an outlet for that.
Maybe. Probably.
Well, also I do, to Moffat's credit, this episode, there weren't too many spices in the soup.
Yeah.
It was, he did keep to like one theme the whole time.
I stayed on target.
You're improving. You're improving, Steve.
and the John Hurt cameo, sorry, spoiler. The John Hurt cameo was totally unexpected and lovely.
Yeah, it was nice. It was handled very well.
But yeah, I think Moffat thinks this is his midnight, and in many ways it is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
cool.
I did feel that midnight vibe.
Moving on. the details of this. Clara. I was so happy to see this whole psychic link sort of Zygon looking technology that was put there in the TARDIS console to have Clara, fly the TARDIS, quote unquote. What did you guys think about that element the Clara element there of the show? And Michelle, let me start with you.
I thought it was really cool. I like that he trusts her to connect with the psychic link, and that he's like, all right, don't get distracted. And even though the phone rings and she's clearly getting distracted, he's like, nope, you didn't get distracted. You're good.
Yeah,
and then when she tried to pull away and the TARDIS was like, no, don't go. Wait, no, you got distracted. That's how I interpreted that. I thought it was cool, and I think that I like that the TARDIS console has different levels of technology on each of its different segments. I really like that. Mm-hmm. And I like that she's like, all right, let's try this again because we can't stay here.
Right. So that is neat. It's kind of cool because to me, it gives writers a little bit of an out. So you can have the Doctor in trouble, and you can have Clara actually just poke her fingers, or anybody poke their fingers in there and take the TARDIS wherever, they want it to go.
Or just take the TARDIS away.
Away.
And maybe you didn't put your fingers in the right holes, and I can't believe I said that.
No!
Well, there... That's a...
If only I had a nickel.
If only this wasn't the all-nude review.
The all-nude... Well, so the whole Clara, Mr. Pink relationship sort of thing, Nancy, what is your view on this? How do you like it so far?
I like Danny. I like him as a character. I like, that he has a history he's not proud of, and apparently that's because Clara planted the idea in his head when he was a kid, because people are always influenced by other people who visit them in the TARDIS.
Well, I think he already had the soldiers and he had a name for it, for the one that doesn't have a gun.
Yeah, but I don't know. But anyway, never mind.
Sorry.
The way they're developing their little relationship, and you can definitely tell it's where direction it's heading in.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's kind of sweet.
Right.
I think Moffat maybe kind of misses being the showrunner on Coupling sometimes, but I did like the way their relationship is going. Ups and downs. It's not, like immediate bling.
Right.
It's cute.
Right. Now, what about you, Chaz? What do you think?
I'm going to be the contrarian in this bunch. Although I like Danny Pink just fine. I haven't got a problem with that. And his backstory is turning out to be quite interesting.
He did once.
But, yeah, they met last episode, and this episode they have kids, and grandkids and great-grandkids. And so on.
Maybe a lineage. It still wasn't too terribly clear.
You didn't recognize her.
Well, that's because it was 100. I wouldn't recognize my great-great-grandfather if I ran into him either. 100 years ago? Come on. So, So yeah, this troubles me. I mean, I think this relationship's moving way too quick. Because now it is implied that Danny and Clara must get together in order for this sequence of events to happen. It's all, you know, it's all kind of timey-wimey, and although I did like seeing the doctor's naked legs in the barn there, and I loved finding out what the barn was all about. That was nice. Uh-huh. That was a nice touch that I approve of. This is, you know, this is Impossible Girl again.
Uh-huh.
And
yep.
That was, I felt like, a kind of a weak, that was the weak Clara that we got last year. This year, actress Jenna Coleman has been having a blast, and it's all over her face,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Her big wide face, that you have to have three mirrors.
She's all eyes, you know. But she's clearly getting to stretch her range, and we're really getting to see what she can do, and that part has been delightful. So I don't want last year's Clara back. Thank you. That was fine.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like this relationship's being very rushed in you know, super TV time. They've barely gotten through their first date very badly, and they've got great grandkids.
He's got the whole show's allegedly about a time machine. Okay. Yeah. So of course it's gonna be a little quick.
Now that sequence of events has to happen.
No, it doesn't.
That's
just only one possibility. That's only one possibility. I mean,
there'll probably be a reset button between now and the end of the season.
It doesn't have to be a reset button.
Have to be Clara that's his great-great-grandmother.
That's true.
Danny is currently dating Clara, which means at some point he's going to end up in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And Danny is clearly the great-great-grandfather of that guy, so that doesn't mean that at some point he's going to end up in the TARDIS. It's compulsory.
It's true. I think so.
And I am actually looking forward to Danny in the TARDIS. I want to see what he does.
Yeah. I think it'll be a nice little Harry Sullivan / Mickey sort of thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Danny Pink turns out to be a cyborg. Yeah.
Cyborg.
That would be depressing.
I wouldn't like that.
Speaking of stupid fan theories that are wrong.
Hello, and welcome this week.
Welcome back to our new segment, fan theories that are wrong.
We need a theme song for that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Lewis, get on that.
Something in an off key. Wait, so I think I figured out what it is with the blackboards.
The blackboard.
You know, whenever the doctor's not busy with some other problem, he's constantly doodling on the blackboards, right? And those have played an increasing role as the season has gone on. And I just feel convinced from the moment he woke up in deep breath, he started doodling on whatever surface he could find. The first thing he was looking for was chalk, and chalk was referenced again in this episode. I think those are the calculations to find Gallifrey.
Well, here's what I'll take it. I'll take it a bit further here, and I think, and I could be wrong because you know it's the Happiness Patrol. So.
And this is the stupid fan theories that are wrong.
So basically, what I'm thinking is we're still seeing a man here trying to figure out who the hell he is. You know, so when he's using that chalk, he's not just. Think, you know, trying to figure out certain things or one particular thing. He's got a unified theory going on here where he's trying to figure out who he is. And I do believe in that this episode that played a very pivotal role in him trying to figure out exactly who he is. And I think that Clara is really figuring it out quicker whether the doctor will listen to her or not, because He seems so completely, just completely self-absorbed in his own ideas and interests in things that he completely almost ignores Clara. He knows that Clara is important to him, but you know, and that's why he says, "Oh, you got to come help me figure this out." But ideally, it's all about him, and he's really trying to figure out who he is.
Well, but this ties into what I said. I mean. Where is Gallifrey now? It's hidden.
Uh-huh.
And that's the problem he was working on at the beginning of the episode.
Right.
Well, I think actually I agree that I think that all of those calculations could very easily be calculations to try to help him find Gallifrey. But
yeah.
I also agree with Lewis that I think that what he was doing at the beginning was working on himself. He's like, I am alone in the TARDIS. The TARDIS is the safest thing in the world, and yet I am afraid. Why is that? And so that's when that logic train
and the
left
way,
the station.
And the way that, you know, spoilers, kids, the way that this episode ended with when Clara came back into the TARDIS, and the doctor starts saying something silly and stupid, and she's like, just shut up. You know, you're just scared of the dark, you silly boy. You know, that's all it is. And he was like, you know, she seemed a little frustrated because after all this stuff that they've gone through and all her, like, you know, date being interrupted, it's basically come down to I've just run off to help this little boy, you know, figure out that he's just been scared of the dark, for crying out loud, you know. And it's kind of... I thought that was kind of funny in a way, but it also also was kind of like you're really seeing a dynamic here build between the Doctor and Clara more than you've seen in the past incarnations, you know, and like last season especially. So like last season, she's just seemed, like you said, Chaz, she's just seemed a little bit, you know, 2D or one dimensional, actually, like wallpaper almost, you know, the pretty girl, the pretty companion.
That's the way women are in the Moffat universe.
Well, it seems like she's really coming into it as a character in her own right. And I like that. I like that a lot. I'm really digging Clara in this. And it's not just because she's got pretty eyes and you know, everything else.
I think it's nice that a companion can get a bit tetchy with the Doctor without just completely blowing up at him. Because usually everybody's just like, oh, the Doctor, oh, the Doctor. Yes, Doctor, yes, Doctor, yes, Doctor. And then eventually he does something and they just, you know, like Donna or like Jamie did in Evil of the Daleks, they just crack and they go off on him. And that's good. I like companions that do that. You know, the little bit of a pressure valve when like this is silly, and I'm a little exasperated with you right now. Like, that's not an attitude towards the Doctor that we usually get. And when we do get that, it tends to characterize the entire character, like Tegan, who's the mouth with legs. And she's the only one who'd be like, why do you keep messing up? Why does this keep happening? You know, people, you know, didn't like that about her. And so it's just nice to see a companion get irritated with the Doctor in a way that is okay. You know?
Still don't understand what that thing was under the bedspread, where it went and...
Oh, yeah.
Who cares?
That was real.
Who cares?
Well, no. We do care because it's part of the contract, the unwritten contract with the writer that he has to answer these questions. And I don't think that's a question that's ever going to get answered because I can't see that coming back
a plot point. Well, let's look at this as what it was. Remember when it showed up, the Doctor, you know, they were saying, what is that? You know, and they go, well, it could be one or three things. You know, it could be one of your mates playing a trick on you. What was the other thing that they said it could be?
That was the main alternative.
That was the main alternative or something else. But, you know, here we are. We figure out at the end, the Doctor was basically just afraid of his own shadow, of the dark. And he's just letting his mind, you know, get a little too crazy because he has been traveling a long time. And so, you know, you start, you know, doing that. So who knows what this was? I'm thinking, I'd like to think that it was one of his mates. It was
certainly short enough to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm okay with that, but you should have seen a kid walking down a hall from behind carrying a blanket. Then I was like, okay, there we know what that was.
Well, the fact that the blanket disappeared, I think, is what I'm like. Okay, I think that
was a kid.
I think that it was just another kid.
Yeah.
Well, that's a Moffat problem. He leaves things hanging.
Alternatively, you know what would have been good? Is if at the very end of the story, when Claire is so confident that it was just him scared of his own shadow because of what she did to him as a child, timey-wimey, it would have been nice if at that moment the TARDIS had made a noise it has never made before and nobody has an explanation for it and they're all looking at each other. Correct.
Well, now the other part is they're on the planet. It's at the end of time. And
so it's the other side of the planet in Utopia, maybe.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Now, what was banging on the door? What was trying to get in?
You know, atmospheric pressure.
That was all that was. Because he kept saying that it could be this, or it could be something else.
Well, that's the whole thing. Like, and that's Moffat trying to mess with us. Because when you are alone in a building and you're a kid and you're like, haha, I'm finally old enough not to have a babysitter. And then you try to get to sleep and the house is just making all this noise.
Right, right.
You know, that's what he was playing on. Uh-huh.
I still think it's sloppy.
No!
I'm not disagreeing with you or
yeah,
but,
we're all agreeing that there's some things hanging there.
So I think we've come to an agreement here that, Moffat, or the show, the way it was edited, maybe it was edited for time, you never know. They cut out a few things that were like, you know, we got to cut something out. Well, let's just cut that out. Our audience is smart enough to know that it was a kid underneath the blanket. Kind of thing. Mm-hmm. What do you think? That's a possibility.
I think it's just like, ooh, it's still up in the air.
Yeah, you could do that too. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I think that's what that is.
Anyway, okay, so next week,
what do we have going on next week? What's the episode next
week? Next week, I'm a little afraid because it's a Steve Thompson episode.
Who's Steve Thompson?
Curse of the Black Spot, a couple of duds in Sherlock.
Ooh.
Yeah, The Blind Banker.
Curse of the Black Sherlock. Spot. That was not one of my favorites.
No, and what else did he do? Yeah, I'm a little afraid.
So what is this one about? I forgot.
I don't know. It sounds like Leverage, actually.
Oh yeah, the bank. They're being forced. Speaking of competence porn, they're being blackmailed to rob a space bank.
Space bank.
Space bank.
With space money.
Bank in space!
I mean, I assume it's a space bank. It might be on a planet, but...
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm sure it's a space bank in space, Florida in space.
Oh, he also wrote Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
Oh, God!
And yet, the people that I know who have seen the work print, this will be the last one of those, who've seen the work print have said it's quite good. You'll like it.
Oh, okay. The last one he did for Sherlock, Sign of Three, was okay. So
yeah. Maybe he's getting better.
So let's try to keep a positive attitude and find out.
Yeah, we will.
So if you want a little bit more happiness in your life, make sure to go check out our podcast. You can download them from iTunes absolutely free. All our latest episodes are there. You can actually leave us a little feedback if you feel like you need to. That would be fine. We read them all, and we love it all, and we love you guys. And if you want some more of our last 4 years of podcasts, 4.5 years of podcasts.
Well, almost five.
Almost five. They're all there at our blogspot, Michelle.
thehappinesspatrol.blogspot.com.
That's right. And you can always email us. Feel free to email us at our Gmail account, the.happiness.patrol@gmail.com.
And we're also on Twitter.
Yes, we are on Twitter, right, Nancy?
Yes, at the H Patrol.
So go follow us, stalk us like you do. And so in the meantime, we're going to get
and
on
Facebook.
Out of here. Oh, yes, so Facebook. We live on
How
Facebook.
How could you forget Facebook?
Yeah, I know. We're doing that thing on Facebook, you know. And so, hey, kids, we're going to have some cool stuff coming up a little later. Actually, next week. Unfortunately, Nancy, you may or may not be here. Is that right?
Well, it depends when we decide to record. But I'm going to be at Burning Uke.
Burning Uke.
In Santa Cruz Mountains.
Oh.
So I'm not going to get to watch the episode until Sunday afternoon or evening.
So do they actually burn a ukulele there?
Yes, sometimes they do. Mostly they burn an effigy. of a uke. It's sort of an iron uke. They tie wiki to it and burn it. Yes, and if you follow me on Facebook, that's actually my
sounds like Game of Thrones. Right.
Would that be a faux uke?
It is. But it's going to be fun. I'm going to be leading a sing-along.
Faux uke, Chad. Yeah, really. Faux uke.
I'm going to be leading a sing-along of 70s and 80s British invasion songs.
But with no Beatles allowed. Nice. Is that correct?
Yes.
Nice.
No Beatles allowed.
So, I'm starting with Lola, and I'm ending with Friday I'm in Love.
Uh-huh. So anyway, we are the Happiness Pro. We will see you guys next week. So keep the faith. Happiness will prevail. I am Lewis B.
I'm Nancy A.
I'm Chaz M.
Hey, listen.
Bye.
We'll see you guys later. Bye.
You've been listening to the Happiness Patrol.